our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
We're not going to have a segue to have hot Brian Hoyer talk, huh? That sucks.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
It's all pumpkin spice beer night, so got that going for me.
Sounds like something that Evan Peterson would drink.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I'm channeling my inner white girl this afternoon.
I don't know if I want to know what that means, but why don't you enlighten us? And I am scared for the audience.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits football podcast. I am your host, Ben Brennis. I am joined by Eric Mackey. How are you doing, Eric?
I'm channeling my inner white girl this afternoon.
I don't know if I want to know what that means, but why don't you enlighten us? And I am scared for the audience.
It's all pumpkin spice beer night, so got that going for me.
Sounds like something that Evan Peterson would drink.
No,
Evan, hi, hello, no. Sorry, oops, my bad.
Yeah, you can't do me like that, Ben.
I do not do you at all.
Clarification, whoa day. Yeah, whiskey in the glass, Evan Peterson on the microphone. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, you know. We've already scared half the audience out by our intro that probably has scared half the audience out.
We'll lure them back in with fantasy football goodness and more jokes, Ben.
I could just do different voices.
That's hard pass. Hard pass. Fantasy football. Here we go.
You sure? I could do it.
No, we're good.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at @bbrennisfwfb. You can find Eric at @mackey671fwfb, and you can find Evan at @evfwfb. Guys, why don't we get started? And what we're going to be starting off with today is talking about the Minnesota passing game without Sam Bradford. Evan, is this offense able to excel offensively without Sam Bradford? And if so, where does this bring Adam Thielen in comparison to Stephon Diggs in terms of fantasy value?
Well, you stole my lead there, because I was actually going to ask you guys which one you thought would be a better play this week. I think Thielen's actually going to be a better play if Keenum is going to be the one under center this week. I don't necessarily know that, you know, Keenum is the entire problem, because their offensive line is awful. Their right tackle, I was watching the game, and I notice offensive line play, but when it sticks out like a sore thumb and I'm actively searching for which guy this is by his number, there's a problem. Mike Reckers, I believe his name was, or Turnstile, as you can call him. I think that Keenum was getting harassed all day. I think Tampa Bay is going to be up in his face as well, and I think he's going to have to get the ball out quicker, which Diggs was doing well on his curl routes, but I think Thielen is going to be the play this week. Do you agree or disagree, Eric?
I agree. Thielen's definitely the one to look for if Bradford's out. And then you kind of tend to get Rudolph a little more involved too. Traditionally, you're going to get a little bit more usage out of your wide receiver too and your tight end when you get the backup quarterback in. Just get a little bit more comfort with them than you do the wide receiver one. But kind of what you said with the O-line, it was pretty bad last week. And, you know, generally with line play, it's when you do notice it that there's a problem. So I would agree with your thoughts on that.
Benjamin, I mean, Thielen's caught more balls. He's been targeted more. They both had 6 targets last game. What do you think?
Well, for me, it's It's a bit tough because I was always more of an Adam Thielen fan than a Stefon Diggs. I feel that there's a bunch of inconsistency to Diggs, and not that Thielen's the person who I feel is more consistent. I just feel that with what his game is based around, he's able to consistently give you a better fantasy floor. And I feel that whatever quarterback's in there, they're still going to try to get him the ball. And I feel that Diggs sometimes does need a big play to put him over the hump in a fantasy sense, to be able to give the value back to the owners. But, you know, Thielen this past week still had 5 catches for 44 yards. So it was nice to see that. I expect him to still be in the range of 5 to 7 catches per week, if not more. But it wouldn't be surprising to see him eclipse less than 50 yards if he only catches 5 balls, given the fact that Case Keenum would be behind center. If Bradford is in there, you know, I think that he has a better chance of gaining 75 to 100 yards just because he's still one of the top 2 targets, and Bradford's obviously a much better quarterback, and he's able to read coverages better. Even though he's always hurt, I still think that he provides a significant fantasy boost to this Vikings offense.
And I think one thing, too, to consider with Bradford is he's actually been the most accurate quarterback in the NFL over the last couple of years from an efficiency standpoint. And, you know, he kind of takes what the defense gives you. He's a little bit more adept at just finding that opportunity than Keenum is. So, you know, you lose any kind of potential ceiling, I guess, with that receiving game that you would get from Bradford if Keenum does end up playing.
One other name that I wanted to throw out was Laquon Treadwell, who we, you know, didn't see last year. And this week he played over 75% of the snaps, had 6 targets, which was tied with pretty much, you know, everybody else for the team lead, kind of spread across the board there. Are you guys interested in Treadwell at all, either whether or not it's Bradford, Keenum, what have you?
For me, he's kind of been on my radar just essentially while he was still in college. And, you know, his rookie year, he was still trying to come back off of being injured, and he was injured a good portion of last year. I think this season you're going to start seeing a little bit of progression. He's still on my radar, but, you know, for standard leagues, I'm not to the point that I want to pick him up yet. Realistically, with this offense, I mean, it'd be nice if they could utilize him more in the red zone because he is such a nice red zone target. But he's a guy I'm kind of keeping my eye on just to see how he progresses through his development this year since he's actually healthy this year.
Yeah, for me, I'm not really looking to pick up Treadwell just because I feel that there's already too many fantasy options to include a fifth. It's already tough enough for most teams to have 5 decent to good fantasy options, and I don't think that the Vikings offense is talented enough in enough positions to sustain having 5 potential fantasy relevant players. I mean, with Thielen and Diggs and Cook, it's already going to be tough enough for Rudolph to maintain a ton of fantasy value in terms of the tight end, but it's tough for me to say that both Rudolph, Treadwell, and then the other 3 pieces that are already going to have more fantasy value, it's going to be tough to sustain all that. Did you have anything else to add on this, Evan?
No, because Michael Floyd coming back from suspension doesn't do anything for me either, and Jarius Wright is blocked, so we can continue.
When we move into the next section, that's going to be talking about the Cleveland backfield. Eric, what are your thoughts on the backfield, and where do you think this offense is going to go forward in the next few weeks?
Well, I think with the Browns, obviously I'm still kind of interested in Crowell if I'm looking for like a low-end flex play. At this point, I think he was probably overranked coming into the year, just given how that team is, but he's starting to really push the team, I guess, for more carries right now. I think the thing with the big thing that you'll probably see is you'll probably see a little bit more emergence in the usage of Duke Johnson, especially with Corey Coleman's injury, to where you may see him get involved a little more. Britt's kind of, I know he's not, we kind of deviated off of backfield, but kind of big picture. I mean, Kenny Britt's already kind of fallen out of favor with the team. So you've got Rashard Higgins pulled off the practice squad that came in and made a pretty good impact last year, so I still think Crowell's going to be kind of the feature back here, but I could see Johnson getting an uptick in usage given their receiving core options or lack of receiving core options. What about you, Evan?
I think that how they're going to utilize Duke Johnson going forward is kind of a big thing, and I definitely agree that Crowell was overranked. I mean, he's gone up against Pittsburgh and Baltimore, which is two really good defenses, especially on the front end. I think that Crowell, like, the boost to him this year was that he actually showed something in the receiving game. He had 40 receptions last year, even though he didn't actually get in the end zone. But he's only had 3 targets in the receiving game all year, even though they've been down. Like, they've been throwing the ball. They've thrown 72 passes to 46 rushing plays from one of the notes I was looking at. So if he's going to be what you drafted him for, he needs to get going in the passing game. And I just think that there is still a role for him, because I think that Duke Johnson is going to be called upon with the Corey Coleman injury. So I think there's still room for him to grow. If somebody's out on Crowell and you can buy low, I still think it's a move worth making. They have the Colts this week. They've got the Jets coming up, Tennessee. They've got a few good matchups where I think he can get back on track.
I think that Crowell is someone that you should also buy in on. I agree with Evan, just for the fact that they're giving him volume. I mean, he unfortunately is not being able to produce in yards per carry. His yards per carry is 2.59 on these attempts so far, and you know he's not getting any, he's basically averaging less than a yard after contact. So I think that the Colts game will make it a little easier for for rushing lanes, and I think that because of how bad the defense is, the passing game may open up a little bit, which in turn will open up the running game for them. I think Duke Johnson is still a player to keep an eye on. I mean, he only has 4 touches or 4 rushes through 2 weeks, but you know they're obviously going to keep targeting him in the passing game. Higgins is someone else that Evan and I talked about in our waiver wire discussion this week. But I definitely think that Crowell is someone that you'll still need to keep some value for. I'm a little bit worried about him. So if there is someone who's willing to buy him at the original value of what his draft day stock was, then I would look to probably move him. But the odds are is that you're going to be selling low at this point. So if that's the case, it doesn't really make a ton of sense. And if you do have a panic owner of Crowell in your league and he's willing to sell low, then that's someone who I'd at least take a chance on. What do you guys think about DeShone Kizer? Do you think that he's going to be someone that's going to be able to stay fantasy relevant in 2 QB leagues? Or do you think that he's someone who's probably off the fantasy radar at this point?
I think for me, he's going to be on the radar just from the simple fact that he does give you kind of that rushing quarterback ability. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Tyrod Taylor to some extent, where he's got the ability to move around to basically create a play out of nothing, but he's also pretty inconsistent with his pass game. 2 quarterback leagues, I mean, he's definitely worth either a stash or, you know, if you got hit with any kind of injury, maybe Bradford was your 2. I mean, if you're running him out there, you don't really have a choice with that. But he's still somebody I'd consider, but a lot of his value is going to come from his ability to run the ball initially, just because there really isn't much of a receiving core there for him to work with.
Yeah, what you're going to be hoping on is the volume from them being down, which they're actually favored to win this week. I don't know if you guys think you would take that bet against Indy, but any chance to bet against the Browns is a good venture. And then the other thing is that you're counting on the rushing. So 10 rushes already this year, already got a touchdown in the bank. So 4 picks to 1 passing touchdown is kind of the thing. And I know he's a rookie, he's going to grow, but he doesn't have a super trustworthy weapon around him now, especially with Coleman being out for an extended period of time. I hope you're stacked everywhere else if you're playing him.
Yeah, like I said, he's probably only relevant in a 2 QB league. And, you know, if you had someone to pair him like an Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady, you know, that's someone that I would be comfortable still utilizing him. But I feel if you have someone who's more of a low-end fantasy quarterback, then you're probably looking to have someone with a little bit more upside and a higher floor. But I think that he, if he's able to stay healthy and not, you know, have these migraines throughout the year, I think he'll be someone who could achieve better than what Cleveland quarterbacks have over the past few years, which isn't saying a lot, but they do seem to have certain weapons that allow him to succeed, and I think that they have the correct coach there to help him succeed as well.
Bortles or Kaiser?
I feel that Kaiser's going to have a better fantasy year just for the fact that the coach is willing to let him run the offense and the coach is there to support him. There's no way that Jacksonville brain trust in any way trust Bortles at this point. They don't. You know, Coughlin's not a Bortles guy. You know, their coach is not, I forget what the coach's name is off the top of my head. But no one there is a Bortles supporter because he's from a different regime. And it's going to be tough for me to expect that the Jacksonville team is sold on him. And when they're only letting him get, you know, that many passes per game, it's kind of tough for you to say that he's going to have the better fantasy season. I mean, like, how many times they're just going to keep running Fournette, you know? Do you disagree with that, Evan?
No, I mean, I was just kind of throwing a name out there because if you said Bortles over Kaiser, I was going to say, well, that kind of makes your entire argument. And I think, you know, Bortles has a better, you know, receiving options. And I mean, he's not known for being a Tyrod-esque runner, but he was decently mobile in college. Like, that's part of his game. Also, part of his game is tipped interceptions and lots of them. But I was just using a quick comparison there.
I mean, like, it's tough for me to expect that Bortles is going to be the quarterback even halfway through. Like, I mean, he's had 3 turnovers 9 times in his career. He's going against Baltimore, who's been having turnovers like crazy this year.
Okay, let's think bigger than Bortles. Like, what, Joe Flacco territory?
I don't see any fantasy value in Joe Flacco, so I would say that if he's going to be somewhere in value, it's going to have to be somewhere like would you pick Sam Bradford over him, given the fact that Sam Bradford is not a huge fantasy quote-unquote quarterback?
Eric?
I think for right now, you know, injury concern aside, I'd still probably take Bradford over Kaiser.
Sorry, continue.
I'd take Bradford over Bortles right now, too. I think a lot of it with Bradford is you don't really have, I mean, kind of what you saw against the Saints, that's probably a ceiling game for him, but you kind of know what your expected floor is where, you know, you look at Bortles, I mean, hell, he could be out of a job. He could be rolling Chad Henne out after this week. They've basically kind of moved more towards let's run Fournette and try to hope that the defense can basically shut everything down so we can just kind of hide him. And so Bortles really isn't getting that garbage time production he did last year when they'd get blown out and then he could roll up for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns in the second half. And I think the thing with Kaiser, there's just not really anything there for weapons around him. And you're really kind of counting on the fact that maybe he gets, you know, a passing touchdown. Maybe he gets 40 yards rushing and a touchdown is his ceiling right now. So I'd still take Bradford, even though that I am a little concerned with the knee overall.
I mean, it seems that all three of us kind of have Kaiser is a low-end quarterback, too, at best. And I don't see a reason to put him any higher. He's probably slightly outside quarterback 2 status for a bunch of people. But I think that's more of the fact that there's quarterbacks who were quarterback 2s that are playing well at this point than what was originally expected, you know. Carson Wentz is playing better. Trevor Siemian, Alex Smith, those guys are playing better than what most people expected. And then there's players who aren't playing up to the same potential that that people thought. You know, Matt Ryan, Aaron Rodgers, Prescott, Cam Newton are a couple players that are playing worse than people had thought. Russell Wilson and Kirk Cousins are a couple others, you know. At this point with the Giants offense, do you guys prefer Kaiser or Eli Manning? Because as of right now, Eli Manning can't even get the ball out. So
that line is horrible. I think the thing with that one you're kind of banking on is you kind of look at him and it's you know, Eli's got that track record, but he can't get a damn thing off right now. He's got probably the best receiving core he's ever had in his career there, but he doesn't even have enough time to get the ball to him. I'd still take Manning just for the weapons upside over him, but the fact that we're really even kind of having that conversation kind of tells you enough, I guess, right now as far as my thoughts with Manning.
Mr. Peterson?
I agree. I take the weapons upside over the running upside, which I think is essentially the argument here.
I mean, I think that Eli is going to have to improve because it's the same line as last year, and I can't imagine that it just all of a sudden got worse. I mean, I know that that line is terrible, but it was terrible last year, and he was still able to succeed to some level of competency. The offense right now, do you know that the offense has scored less points than the Jets, who was probably the quote-unquote worst offense in the entire league by every fantasy expert and every real-life football expert coming into the season?
Do you know they're the only NFL team with less than 100 yards rushing on the season? And I think that includes two teams that had a week one bye. So they're terrible.
Yeah, that's an understatement. Why don't we move into the next section that we're going to be talking about, and that's going to be talking about the Carolina passing game. What are your thoughts on this entire offense, and mainly the passing game with Greg Olsen going down, Evan?
Hot take analysis. Greg Olsen being injured is a blow to this offense. But let me tell you, if somebody is also freaking out about Christian McCaffrey, I would be buying in. I think he's probably one of the most dynamic pass catchers. Now, Kelvin Benjamin is probably the best one, but he really has no intention of running after he catches the ball. And I was interested in Funchess. We kind of talked about him a little bit on the waiver wire show. I saw he was actually dropped in a 14-team league of mine, and I like freaked out because I had zero wide receiver depth, and I couldn't believe somebody would do that. But I think he will be an interesting guy going forward, and I don't know how much you buy into the, like, Ed Dixon saying he can do everything that Greg Olsen can do, so don't change the playbook. Like, I think Dixon can be serviceable. I think that everybody going nuts over Benjamin Watson and, like, blowing all their fab if you lost him to try and get him, I think, you know, Dixon could be just as fine and probably 80% cheaper. But I think that Cam is going to get better, and I think there's better things in the future for San Francisco, or for Carolina, excuse me.
I was going to say, please don't compare Carolina to San Francisco, because I know they're both bad at this current time, but that's an insult to my boy Cam.
Your boy, yeah.
He's my boy. What about you, Eric? Yeah,
we're not going to have a segue to have hot Brian Hoyer talk, huh? That sucks. I think my thing with Cam, I mean, obviously he's not running as much, but the fact that he is still running is a good thing, because in all honesty, the ability to respect that as a defense does open up their passing game, because you basically have to have a defender shadow him. But I don't see him having the same volume as in years past, so I think the passing game will be a little bit more restricted. You can tell he's still a little rusty with the mechanics. He's missing stuff. Well, he's never been accused of being an accurate quarterback. He's missing some stuff that he would have been able to complete last year. I think what you're going to see with a shift with that offense is, now that Olsen's out, they haven't utilized McCaffrey as much as I thought they would. I think you're going to probably see a bigger role for him in their offense. And if there is somebody, like Evan said, that's panicking on McCaffrey right now because of where you had to draft him, the closer you got toward the start of the season, I mean, now's a great time to try to buy low on him. Kelvin, basically, as soon as he catches the ball, falls down, but at least he's still there. He's still a good big body target, especially in the red zone. But kind of the guy that you know, like Evan touched on, was Devin Funchess. He's kind of the guy, I think, that has the ability to make a larger step forward in production with that offense, just because he's kind of the forgotten element in that passing game, because a lot of defenses aren't going to sit there and script to stop him. They're going to try to shut down McCaffrey and Benjamin. So I think he probably overall is the chance to gain the most from Olsen being injured, as far as the receiving core, other than McCaffrey.
Yeah, I think that the Saints couldn't have come at a better time for this offense. Obviously, the loss of Greg Olsen is going to hurt significantly, but it may allow Cam to go through his progressions to other people. It will give McCaffrey a boost, probably. I could see a boost for both Funchess and Russell Shepard. He may just lean very heavily on Kelvin Benjamin, which wouldn't be the worst thing, because the corners that he's going against throughout the season aren't overly good quality corners, so he's going to find himself in a good position to be able to exploit fantasy matchups. So I do think that this is a good week, and I think that the offense will improve. As you heard me talk about on the waiver wire show, I do think that they may only score around 20 points because of the loss of Olsen, but I think that the Saints offense is just kind of a mess right now as a result.
Yeah, I mean, Christian McCaffrey should have had a touchdown on that play towards the end of the game. I think that, you know, it's been rough going against two defenses that, you know, San Francisco lost Reuben Foster in that game. Buffalo was all up in Cam's grill. I think they had 6 sacks, and, like, it was really random ass, like 34-year-old Lorenzo Alexander up in his grill and Jordan Poyer coming out of the way to become this like IDP pickup. I think the Saints, like you said, come at the right time for them to try and get everything going before they hit New England, Detroit, a couple other harder matchups, Atlanta. And I just think that there's better for Cam coming around. I think that he could put together the yardage. You know, he threw for 228. I think he can definitely throw for more than that against New Orleans. And the 2 touchdowns that he threw in week 1, and kind of put them together for an awesome stat line for a start this week.
Why don't we talk about the other side of the ball, and that's going to be talking about the Saints running game. Obviously, this has not been what fantasy owners expected through the first 2 weeks from, you know, both Ingram and Peterson. What are your thoughts on the running game for the Saints, Eric?
Pretty much this was a backfield I avoided in most drafts, other than for Alvin Kamara, if I could get him late. I wasn't really interested in Ingram once they signed AP. And from the looks of it, they're not very interested in AP either. For me, it's not really, Kamara's about the only one I'm interested in until they start actually deciding whether they're going to actually have a run game or not. I really am not interested in any of the other two backs, either Ingram or Peterson, just because neither one of them's getting the volume that you would need to even consider starting them at this point.
Yeah, I think it's tough to even consider starting anyone in the backfield. I mean, Ingram had a decent week last week, but, you know, that's because he, you know, had a decent run. He had a 28-yard run at the and that was basically the last play of the game. And, you know, he did have 12 touches, but when you have that 28-yarder at the end of the game and basically you had 76 for the entire game, it doesn't leave you a lot of room for the other 11 touches that he had to gain any fancy value. So it's tough to say that he's someone that you want to use. Peterson doesn't look like they are interested, just exactly like Eric said, which I don't really understand, and I'm a little bit surprised that the offense is having as difficult of a time as they are. But we'll see what happens this week against Carolina. What about you, Evan?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens when Snead gets back on the field, because I think it's going to open things up a little bit more for them. I definitely don't understand why Adrian Peterson is still on this team. And the one thing about Mark Ingram is that they're still getting him still pretty heavily involved in the passing game. Kamara, you know, only saw 17 snaps this week. He definitely kind of saw his workload tail off a little bit. So I think if you are still, you know, trying to start a guy in a PPR format, I think it's still Mark Ingram. But I'm not excited by any stretch of the imagination to start him. I mean, I do think that eventually Kamara can carve out a bigger role here, given injury or a departure from Adrian Peterson. But I think you are right to be kind of shy going forward. But Mark Ingram as a flex play, why not?
Eric, do you have anything else to add on the Saints' offense in general, potentially with the Snead coming back in in the next 2 weeks?
Well, I think Snead's only going to help that offense just because it'll allow them to have a little bit better spread overall. Teams aren't going to just be able to focus predominantly on Michael Thomas, and then you know, the Saints aren't having to rely on Ted Ginn and Brandon Coleman to kind of win the day for them. So it just gives another player for defenses to get accounted for, but I think it'll help the passing game a lot more than it will the run game overall.
Brandon Coleman saw the exact same number of snaps as Michael Thomas. Like, that's not what the Saints want to do if they want to be a productive football team.
I agree. I think that Snead coming back will help open up the offense, and we'll see what happens. You know, maybe when Snead comes back, they finally have a running back that they'll settle on. And, you know, I understand that they're not using Peterson, so it doesn't make a ton of sense that they're employing him at this time unless they're going to start giving him more run, because otherwise he's just a very expensive bench option.
It was one of the oddest signings of the offseason was Peterson to that offense, because he's not a good fit for what they try to do.
I agree. Why don't we move into Tennessee offense, and what are your guys' thoughts on Marcus Mariota through two games of the season, Evan?
Well, I mean, they were definitely in milk the clock mode last week, but it's interesting because he's only thrown the one touchdown pass, which didn't travel beyond the line of scrimmage. So I don't know really if you're worried about the Titans offense. If I mean, he's kind of got eyes for Eric Decker and Corey Davis. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. So I don't know which guy, even though Rashard Matthews did tie Decker for the team in targets, I just think it's really interesting what you think is going to happen against, you know, a tough Seattle team, or when they're not, you know, way up 20 points by halftime, essentially. Are you worried about Mariota going forward? Anybody?
I'm not really worried about him. I think that he's still going to give you decent fantasy value. Obviously, Delaney Walker is someone who I still expect to have a good fantasy season. I think Corey Davis and the injury hurt. I mean, he's not playing this week, so we'll see what happens. Obviously, we're going to see if Decker's able to get going to a capacity, but I think the loss of Davis, at least for this week, is going to hurt. It would be nice to see Murray be able to come back. I know that he does have the hamstring injury, but it would be good to see him play at full strength and actually, you know, make people confident that they had a good fantasy player when they picked him. And he's shown consistency over the last few years, and he's been relatively healthy, and I'm a little bit surprised with the slow start. But I do have confidence that this offense is able to make significant improvements and be a good offense going forward for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, I think with Mariota, he's definitely one that you're going to have to be patient with initially. The Titans, kind of the first game, were really struggling to really even establish a run game. And then last week they got up enough to where they weren't really needing to pass. They just ran Derrick Henry the rest of the game, basically. So I think it's a situation with Mariota that, you know, you're going to get the production. It's just, to some extent, with that team and how they're built, you almost want them to be in more of a like a tie or a losing situation, to where they're forced to pass a little more, because as soon as they get a lead, all they're going to do is run pretty much the rest of the game. I still think of the Titans' pass catchers, the only one I'm really trusting week to week is going to be Delanie Walker, but then the next one would be Rishad Matthews. Decker's been getting a few targets, but he just kind of fades away, and they really haven't been utilizing him as much as what I thought they would in the red zone, to where, which is kind of his specialty overall. But I think with Mariota, you just got to be patient and wait for it to happen. I think it'll turn around here in the next couple weeks.
It's just really interesting looking at the matchup they have coming against Seattle, which is obviously a rough defense, but Seattle's been struggling offensively. So they could still be in a situation where, even though they're up against a great defense, they're still up, you know, 10 points. I don't think that would be crazy for it to happen. And then they're trying to milk a clock against a good defense. And I mean, I don't know what exactly you think the game script could look like there. I do hope that, you know, Murray is fine. I do think it was just a matter they were up. Why risk, you know, aggravating an injury? Why not throw Henry? But Henry's a bigger guy, and you think he would kind of get better as the day goes on, as he just kind of powers through. He looked a little gassed going, and I mean, he was picking up first downs and on the field a lot at the end of the game. It's just something for all the truthers out there that say, oh, if Derrick Henry shouldered a full workload. It's just something I noticed anecdotally watching the game.
Why don't we move into the last topic that we're going to be talking about, and that's going to be talking about the Washington Redskins passing game. So far through these two games, you know, it hasn't looked like a great passing offense that people were expecting. You haven't really got a ton of fantasy value from Kirk Cousins. Jordan Reed has not played great if you're playing in a standard league. If you're in a PPR, at least he's had 11 catches through the 2 weeks. But their big offseason signing in, Terrell Pryor, hasn't really done a ton. And as of right now, Jamison Crowder hasn't. So outside of Evan's boy Chris Thompson, is there any hope that this offense is going to have a good week against Oakland this week? Because this should be an offensive shootout. But with how Oakland's played defense and with how the Redskins have played offense, is it really going to be that, Evan?
It could definitely happen if Terrell Pryor actually decides to show up. I actually got a chance to sit down and watch this game a little closer. He did not look good. Chris Thompson actually had the ability to do a lot more. I'm even more excited about him now. And Jamison Crowder, I think, is definitely going to get better. I think he's probably the best receiving option on the field as far as the wide receivers, if Jordan Reed's on the field, I definitely think that he's the apple of the eye. I wish Josh Doctson was healthy. He got like one fade target in the end zone, and he was kind of a ghost. I wish he would do something, but I think it's going to be really interesting to see what this backfield is going to give them. Even though, like you said, I think they're going to be put on their heels and have to throw a little bit.
What about you, Eric? Is this an offense that you're looking to touch this week or no?
Well, I think overall, it's definitely not what you thought you were going to get initially. There's definitely not the same chemistry between Cousins and Pryor at this point like there was with him and Garcon and D-Jax. I think overall, you know, if Doctson can stay healthy and actually get on the field, it just gives them another weapon for that game, for that defense to have to kind of respect. Crowder, I think, is a guy that should be able to excel, especially going forward. I think the big kind of caveat is what's going to happen with Terrell Pryor. He's already had three drops on the year in two games. He hasn't really been getting, you know, he got targeted a ton against Philadelphia and then just was not getting open against the Rams at all. Reed's been the most consistent option for getting targeted, but shockingly, he's battling injuries and hurt again. So, you know, he's only going to be kind of a week-to-week option. But I think this week against the Raiders, especially because Kirk tends to do a little bit better in those primetime games where you got the spotlight on him. I think this will be a little bit of a telling week as far as what you may be able to expect from the offense going forward. It's a situation I think Cousins was a little bit hyped going into draft season and probably should have been more outside of the top 10 quarterbacks rather than where a lot of times he was going as like a number 6, number 7 quarterback. So I think you're kind of seeing a little bit more of that inconsistency, but I think as the season wears on, it'll be a little bit better, but I don't think you're going to see what you saw from Cousins last year.
Yeah, I think that this team could have a decent fantasy week, but, you know, if Reed's not here, I think that the player I'm going to be looking to have a good week is Jamison Crowder, not Terrell Pryor. I'd like Terrell Pryor to have a good week, but I think Sean Smith is going to be put on him, and he may shadow him and shut him down if he isn't able to get open. But I still think that the best play of the week is probably Chris Thompson, just for the fact that I feel the running back is going to be able to get a bunch of catches, probably like 6 catches and 6 rushes. I still think that P. Ryan is going to get like 15 rush attempts. We had talked about that in the waiver wire podcast this week, but we'll have to see what happens with Jordan Reed. I do expect this offense to improve because they can't stay this bad. There's just too many weapons, and it's not like the offensive line is the Giants where they can't actually get to utilize the weapons.
Real quick, well, I mean, I was thinking about how Eric was talking about the draft hype of Cousins and whatnot. Did we not discount him enough for losing 2,000-yard receivers? And we were just like, oh, no, he's cool. He's got Terrell Pryor. He'll be fine. And then Pryor comes out and looks like this, and everybody's just kind of like, well, we didn't account for this to happen. So, like, was it something that we should have, you know, factored in a little bit more, or is it something that you think is just not even worth worrying about?
Well, I think there was probably too much blind faith with Pryor coming over because of what he did show with Cleveland on a bad team with a bad quarterback to where he was the focal point of the offense predominantly, and he produced. I think there was a lot of kind of, you know, just kind of jump to conclusion logic that, oh, well, now he's going with a better quarterback with Cousins. There's more weapons around him. You know, keep in mind, I mean, this is Pryor's true second season as a full-time wide receiver as part of it. And he's not working with to where he's got that developmental ability as a wide receiver with a quarterback in the offseason as significantly and through a full season like he did In Cleveland, it's a completely different offensive scheme, and I don't think the chemistry's fully there either. And if you look divisionally, they're in a little bit stronger division for cornerback play than they were in Cleveland. And I think there was a lot of kind of just overestimation of what was actually going to happen when, you know, I think with everybody saw Crowder running out of the slot last year and he was getting open and doing really good things. Well, a lot of that's predominantly just because of the fact that you did have two established wide receivers that had been in the system a long time. So I think there probably was a little bit where we didn't fully take into account the fact that you're losing receivers that had been in that offense to a guy that's basically been a receiver for 1 year.
I mean,
right. Go ahead, Ben.
I mean, I do understand that the development of Pryor can be stunted because he's only a second-year wide receiver. I do get that, but he seemed to develop so quickly last year that I feel that he's going to a better offensive situation, that he should still be able to work through that to a degree. And I understand that they did lose some good receivers, but I didn't expect the offense to kind of fall flat on its face as it had. I mean, it's not like they didn't bring in other players. It's not like Crowder hasn't been there. It's not like Reed hasn't been there. You know, the offensive line didn't really change. Nothing really changed other than bring Terrell Pryor in. And I wouldn't have expected it to have as big of a drop-off as they have to this point.
Okay, well, here's the thing. So Pryor needed 140 targets to get to his 1,000 yards last year. DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon each had, they were just under 115. So you think about, okay, them leaving. Oh, yeah, Terrell Pryor is going to get 140 targets, no problem. Well, you see that that's not how the offense was run. And so we kind of had to, like, jam the Redskins into this framework of what the Browns were doing. And I kind of wonder that, you know, like you were saying, the bump up from Washington to Cleveland, or, you know what the hell I mean. The bump up in offense, like if he had done this on a good offense, like say he was on Arizona and he did 1,000 yards on 140 targets and he came here, would we view him the same, or would we be like, oh man, you know, it's not a big deal? Like, it was the fact that he was a Brown kind of inflating the price because we thought he was going to be so much better?
I didn't personally think that his value was going to be significantly boosted. I just thought that he was going to have the ability to have another consistent year similar to what he had last year because the offense around him is better and is able to consistently get him the ball and he doesn't have to worry about the coverage. I had expected a slightly better year, but I also understood that there was some plays last year that he was able to break for touchdowns and he was able to get long gains. So I understood that there could be some pluses and minuses to it, and I also understood that he wouldn't be the number one option like he was last year, so there could be a slight decrease in targets as a result.
Yeah, he's kind of at the point where, you know, you need all those targets. And sometimes for him, too, it was just the fact of getting peppered over and over and over again to kind of get in that rhythm. And I think he is going to a better offense, part of the consequence of having that better offense is the fact that you've got other mouths to feed, where really in Cleveland there wasn't anything else from a receiving aspect. So I think that might be factoring into it too, where if you don't get him the ball early and often to kind of get that confidence going, you know, that might be another factor in kind of just what he's done this year. I think, you know, this season, or not this season, but this next week will probably be probably kind of the eye opener. If he does go off, then I think he'll get a little bit more of a boost going forward. But for now, he's definitely, and kind of the Redskins offense as a whole is definitely hasn't met expectations, I think, that we established in the preseason.
All right. Evan, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
at EvFWFB on Twitter. I'm also writing a weekly streamers article for Razzball that comes out on Thursday. I'm occasionally subbing on the Waiver Wire podcast with you and having a lot of fun, which people should check that out if they love the banter of you and I. And yeah, watching football on Sundays, and hopefully you'll get to join us with your new job, right, Ben?
Yes, yes, I will be able to join. When am I joining?
Us watching football. Come on over, Ben. It's only like a 18-hour drive.
Yes, Eric. What about you? Where can you be reached, and what are you working on?
Be reached on Twitter at Mackey671FWFB, and. I'm kind of not entirely sure what I'm working on at this point, but I'll get there eventually.
All right. And I can be reached at BBrennisFWFB. You can find me throughout the NBA offseason on a podcast with Mr. Eric Mackey. You can find me throughout the rest of the baseball season on the Tuesday Baseball Show with Chuck Anderson. You can find me on the Wednesday Show joined by Evan and Eric. And you can find me on the Tuesday Waiver Wire Show with Donnie Miller for football. So until next time, have a fantastic football season, everyone.